The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
I was instantly taken with this man. I would go into his restaurant every night and, you know, sit at the chef's counter and kiss him in between, whatever. It was so romantic. We decided to move in together. I knew this was moving really fast, and I wanted it to. 3 months in, after meeting, we're getting married. He told me that his visa had expired. He's like, well, now that we're married, I can stay in the country. He took my phone and deleted a bunch of my male friends' contacts from it. And he's like, now that you're married, it's not appropriate to have male friends. He would try to find any little thing to start a fight. And he like kind of held the knife and like gave me this menacing look that I fucking put chills down my spine. And the window was open and I just jumped out. And he was calling me, blowing up my phone, saying like, you better come home now or I'll kill myself and you have to deal with the body or I'll kill you if you don't come home. So more cops are showing up. And he tells my dad that usually they take stories like this, like from a hospital bed. He's like, no one gets out this early.
Jenna was busy manifesting her artistic dreams, crafting out her own slice of paradise in the vibrant city of angels. As she approached her late 20s, Jenna still believed in true love, but wasn't actively pursuing it when she was swept off her feet by a tall, charismatic chef. She became intoxicated by his culinary prowess, an embodiment of romantic tropes. She felt like all the ingredients for a perfect love story were laid out before her. Their whirlwind courtship led to marriage within 90 days of meeting. But what starts out as a passionate, impulsive romance quickly turns into the realization that Jenna is entangled in a marriage of convenience with a volatile, emotionally unstable, and abusive chef who literally brings his knives out to control and threaten her life.
I moved to Los Angeles when I was 27 from New York, and I was in that whole world of improv and stand-up comedy, pursuing a career in entertainment. And I was performing, I had shows around town. And at the time I was having just an absolute blast. I really did feel this invincibility thing, but I had was doing a storytelling show on my 29th birthday. After the show, we went over to a bar and I was hanging out with all my friends. And I was just like high on life. And then this tall Venezuelan man came over. He was the chef at the restaurant next door. They had just closed down. He came over and wished me a Feliz Cumpleaños. And I was instantly taken with this man. You know, he was tall. He was really swarthy, dashing, and would speak to me in Spanglish. And so we ended up making out and hanging out all night. And we switched numbers at the end of the night. And he called me the next day and wanted to make me dinner because he used to teach at Le Cordon Bleu in Peru. And he was Venezuelan and Spanish and just a very, very talented chef. And so I went over to his house. I was like, I don't think I've ever had a man like cook some elaborate pasta dish with 11 ingredients for me before. I was just enamored with this. I was like, this is so sexy. And that was it. So we're pretty much from that point inseparable. When he was at work, I would go into his restaurant every night and, you know, sit at the chef's counter and kiss him in between, whatever. It was so romantic. And so I did a show, I remember, and he couldn't be there because he was, you know, chefing. And I went back to his house after and he had handwritten a banner and hung it up on the wall. And it said, like with computer paper, it was said, congratulaciones on your show. And he had a cold bottle of Prosecco. And I was like, wow, okay, this guy gets me. This guy is like all about celebrating my talents. Like I was just so like, yes. We decided to move in together. You know, we're like, let's do it. We moved in together pretty quickly. And I had never lived with a boyfriend at that point. But I figure, you know, this guy's great. We found a really cool house. And then one day he flew to Venezuela. He was like, I have to fly to Venezuela for the night. And I was like, what? You know, I didn't understand why. Turns out he flew down there to get his grandmother's gold rings. He came back and he got down on one knee and proposed to me. I knew this was moving really fast and I wanted it to. I think I just felt so ready. I want to get married. And this guy was just so passionate and all about me and was definitely also putting a foot on the accelerator. And so when he proposed, I was absolutely thrilled. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I gotta tell my parents. They knew he existed, but they had never met, let alone FaceTimed. But my parents were super supportive. When I called and we told them we got engaged, they were like, that's great. Because they totally trusted me. They've loved my ex-boyfriends. They were genuinely excited for me. They're like, this is cool. He sounds really wonderful. We went out to Zanzibar and went salsa dancing, but I don't know how to dance backwards. And so we just like sat down and drank and like went in the photo booth. And so we decided to get married in Vegas. His mom was in Venezuela and couldn't come. And so we kind of also picked Vegas because the Little White Chapel streams live. And so his family and like anyone who couldn't come could watch it, you know, on screen. And I thought there was something really romantic about running away to Vegas. My family flew down. My uncle came in from Hawaii. A couple of his friends came and we grabbed a couple cakes and drove over to Vegas. And that's when he met all of them for the first time. You know, it was on the day we were getting married. So, but they all hit it off because he's like extremely charming. He's a great storyteller. And so they were all pumped. I had emailed everyone, all my friends. I was like, e-blast. I was like, hey guys, I'm getting married in Vegas tonight. Here's a link if you want to watch it at 8 o'clock. And most of my friends wrote back and they were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were dating someone. And I was like, yeah, well, I mean, I wasn't really for that long. 3 months in after meeting, we're getting married. And the wedding was just so beautiful and so fun. And we went up to the honeymoon suite and had cake. And we did our first dance. The song we danced to was Crazy Love by Van Morrison. And so we drive back the next day and he immediately tells me he's going to quit his job. And I was like, what? I was like, you're, you know, a very popular, high paid executive chef. So I was like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I don't know. I want to figure something else out, but I'm really stressed. So I'm going to quit. And I was surprised because I knew he took so much pride in that job. And also like, you just got married. What are you talking about? You're going to quit your job. And so I immediately went and got another great job, but now I was going to be working pretty much all the time. But I thought that was kind of what you do in a marriage. You pick up the slack. Days after we got married, he told me that his visa had expired. And I didn't know that. I was like, oh, okay. So he's like, yeah, so let's do the paperwork. And I was very blindsided by that. I've never gotten a visa myself. So I don't really know what is involved. This is a whole thing. You know, if we don't do this, you can get deported, you know? And he's like, well, now that we're married, I can stay in the country. At the time, I didn't see that for what it was. I just didn't. I was just blinded. All of a sudden, some switch flipped and he didn't want me performing. He like didn't want me out at night getting on stage. He took my phone and deleted a bunch of my male friends' contacts from it. And he's like, now that you're married, it's not appropriate to have male friends. And then the verbal abuse started and it started to be with like little cutting remarks, just like, you know, you're so lucky that I love you because no one else will. You were a whore before you met me. He said I wasn't feminine for not taking his last name and just really find every opportunity to insult me verbally. And then he insisted on driving me to my nanny jobs or to my improv classes. And at first I thought, oh, okay. Oh, he wants to spend time with me and hang out. But what it really was that I was never alone. I was slowly being kind of cut off from my community because either he had deleted their numbers or I wasn't able to make plans also because I was working around the clock. And then would just like launch into me some sort of tirade about, you know, he read my emails and found some email from a guy in 2007 that I had dated. But he would try to find any little thing to start a fight. He just loved picking fights with me. And I'm very conflict averse. I love peace. I love harmony. My love language is not combat at all. And I didn't tell my friends because I was embarrassed. A lot of them had watched the wedding. They'd gotten to know him. He's very, very charming. They all really loved him. And it was only happening behind closed doors. It was like in the car, we'd be at a birthday party. And he's just like the life of the party. We get in the car and he's like, you'll never make it. You're not funny. You have no talent. Like he would just, I mean, and I was like sitting there like, Jesus, man, like it's too much. I didn't really know what to do. I was too embarrassed to tell anybody. I really thought I was like, okay, I'm just going to try to tough this out. But I was like, I'm not going to give up on this. But then there was an inciting incident when I remember he pulled a knife out on me at our house. So he's making us quesadillas and we were in the kitchen. The topic of like our number comes up. He wanted to know my number. People I've slept with. And I have a policy if I don't share that with the guy I'm with, you know? And I knew it because I'm a comedian. I keep track because I use them as source material for my shows. I remember telling him what my number was. I'm not embarrassed about it. I was 17 at the time. And I was 29 and, you know, I had long relationships, but he was absolutely shocked. And I didn't think it was that crazy. I really didn't. He was 35 and I was 29. So he was older. And he was like, mine is 4. And then that's when he like blew his top. He was like, oh my God, I married a whore. Whoa. I was like, dude, that's a little heavy. Like, I'm not a whore. And he like kind of held the knife and like gave me this menacing look that I fucking put chills down my spine. And the window was open because we're making quesadillas and it was getting hot in there. And I just jumped out. We're on the first floor. I just jumped out the window. I mean, so he didn't like take a swipe at me, but the way he was like gripping the knife, that was just enough for me to be like, I got to get away from this guy. But everything's out the house, my pets, my cat, Dante, all my stuff. And so I was like, I have to go home. I don't have anything with me. And so I did a couple hours later and he had cooled off. But then of course he made it all about that I'm lucky that he loves me because I was such a whore and that no one else would have taken me on. It's cyclical. Like he would usually go into a rage and then he would calm down and cry and apologize. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to wait until he's on his down cycle and go home. And sure enough, he did. He apologized. He's like, I'm sorry. I don't know what's, you know, wrong with me. And he would try to get me to feel bad for him. He was successful in that. He would make me feel sorry for him for being mean to me. Then there was another incident. My sister had just had her first baby. And I wanted to fly up there instantly, but he was like, well, I can't get on a plane because my visa expired. So we have to drive. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. I really wanted to get away from him, you know, to see my family alone, but he insisted we go together. And so we drove up and, you know, he's making dinner for my entire extended family. And he's just singing my praises in front of them, just as I'm like peeling potatoes. I was honestly relieved for the break because when he's around other people, then he's not mean to me, but the instant we're alone, he would just find some like evil shit to say to me or loom over me as I'm getting ready in the bathroom. Like it was just like too much. And so my family leaves and we're staying in my aunt's house and I go upstairs and I'm brushing my teeth and I'm just like, what am I going to do? I'm at a loss. And then he comes in the room and he has his hands behind his back and he comes over and walks past me and then a knife blade drops to the floor. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like he's going to kill me in the house where I used to spend Christmas every year growing up. My family's going to probably find me. All these thoughts are running through my head and he turns to me, but he puts the knife on his own arm and he starts crying about how he's going to kill himself for being so mean to me. So I start crying because I'm like, what is happening? Like I really didn't have words. I didn't have like a mental framework for like what he's doing. I didn't understand. And so then we ended up sobbing on the floor. I get him to drop the knife and then like kick it away. And then I remember he falls asleep and I just laid awake and I was like, what are we going to do? What am I going to do? We leave the next day and the drive down was a nightmare. I'd written a script and on the front page was my name, my full name. And he was like, why don't you take my last name? And I was like, well, we agreed that I wouldn't, you know, before. And it was all of a sudden a major issue for him that I didn't take his last name. And so we get in a fight. He rips off his wedding ring. He pulls the car over to the side, jumps out, throws his wedding ring at me and starts marching down the side of the highway. And I remember just sitting there and watching him walk away. And I was like, do I get in the driver's seat and drive? Do I leave him here? Like the thought crossed my mind. And then I was like, well, no, because everything kind of seemed like a certain death. And he always tried to like not poke the bear. I was like, I'm not trying to fight this guy. So I drive, you know, up to him. I beg him to get back in the car. We get back to Los Angeles and I go out for ladies' night. And so we're at the restaurant, this Mexican place. And all of a sudden he shows up because he knew where I was. Because I told him. And that's the thing about this. Like I was very open with all my like bank passwords. I was open with my email passwords because I had nothing to hide. I was like, I'm married. I'm monogamous. I'm not cheating on my husband. And he would use that against me. And at this point, I had been working. He was still not employed. And I was drained financially, absolutely drained. I was being very much financially controlled. And we're at dinner and he walks in. And they're like, oh, hey, you know, and they're excited to see him. And I'm just like, oh, God, this guy, you know, and he sits down next to me and he like pinches me, my thigh under the table, like really hard. And at this point, nothing's gone physical. Okay. It's only verbal and like kind of threatening. And so that freaked me out because if that, then what else? If he's willing to like do that in a restaurant. So we're chit-chatting, we sign our check, and I sign my last name on the receipt, and then he makes a comment about how I didn't take his last name. And my friends are like, oh yeah, well, you know, it's because she's a performer, like it's, you know, would be weird now to change it. And that just like enraged him further. And so we got to our cars, and he was parked in front of me. And I get in my car, and I put on my seatbelt, and I look up, and I see his two white reverse lights slam into my front hood. And I was like, oh, like, oh my God. And he whips his car around and he stares at me through the window and gives me this look and he drives away. I felt instant relief. And this is why, because up until that point, I didn't have any bruises. I didn't have evidence. I didn't have like recordings or anything of what's been going on. But now it's like, okay, he just crashed into me. You know, I had some sort of proof. And so I ran into my friend's house and I told them everything. And they were like, oh my God, we have to call the cops. And he was calling me, blowing up my phone, saying like, you better come home now or I'll kill myself and you have to deal with the body or I'll kill you if you don't come home. So I had some text messages from him. So we go to the police station and we tell them everything. So they send officers over to our house. And sure enough, he tells them that we just got married and we had like a newlywed spat and that everything's fine. He just kind of like lost his temper. And so the cops call me and they're like, oh, you should just go home. We talked to him. He told us that you're newlyweds and everything will be fine. You should just go home. I've never had such an instinct that if I went home, I was going to die. Like he would kill me. And he's sending me pictures of his knife set. It did not occur to him that I would not come home. I'm up the entire night figuring stuff out with my friends. And I couldn't sleep, of course. And so the next morning I call my dad and I tell him everything. I'm like, this is what's been going on. And him and my brother got on a plane and flew down that afternoon. And I picked him up and it was very somber. It was just very, you know, we had to figure out what we're going to do. And so we go to the hotel. I booked a U-Haul. I booked a storage space. I texted 8 of my friends and I was like, can you please be at my house at 10 a.m. tomorrow? I'll explain later. And so I finally called him. Who's begging me for a chance to talk and go to therapy or go to church or whatever. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to mind fuck this guy back. And I was like, you know what? I would love to go to therapy with you. Yes, let's work on it. I just need to stop by the house and get a few things. I'm not ready to see you. So if you can just not be there, I'll only be an hour or two. I just want to feed Dante and get a few things. And he was like, okay, yes, thank you so much. So we show up 10 a.m. And I called the police to have an escort come. Because that's what one of them recommended. And so I call and this cop shows up, you know, he's kind of like kicking it. My friends are there and I'm like, you guys, we have to move me out right now. I'm getting out of this thing. And so right away, everyone's just packing up all my stuff. And I'm describing, I give him, you know, his expired papers because those were in the house and his passport. And I'm telling the officer everything that's going on. And he was like, wait a minute, this guy doesn't know you're moving out right now. And I was like, yeah, he has no idea. He could come back at any minute. And so he calls for backup. So more cops are showing up. And he tells my dad that usually they take stories like this, like from a hospital bed. He's like, no one gets out this early. So we get me packed up and I leave his grandma's rings on the table and we go and unpack into the storage unit. And at the time the woman I was nannying for was out of town shooting a movie. So I stayed at her house, which was a blessing and a half. But I remember just sitting there with my dad and my brother and I thanked them. I was like, Dad, thank you for being an example of like a loving male because I knew that this wasn't it. I knew it in my heart. And that gave me the strength to get out because this whole time that he was berating me and just hurling like horrific abuse at me. I knew in my heart of hearts, this is attention, but this is not love. In the wake of it, he tried to send letters through friends, calls, begging to get back together. And so I fill out all the paperwork to try to get a restraining order. And at the restraining order office, wrote down everything, like, this is what's going on. But I was not granted one because I did not have any bruises on my body. And I was so devastated. I have no legal protection against this guy. And so as I was leaving, this woman pulled me aside. She was like the head of the department. And she's like, Jenna, I read your file and this guy's going to try to kill you. And I was like, what? And I was like, well, why can't we go back in there? Can you stamp something? And she's like, I can't, but you need to either deport him or you need to leave California. And I was like, well, I can't leave California. I just moved here. I'm like, this is my life dream and everything's here. Why do I have to leave? And she's like, you need to be extra, extra vigilant in how you move about the city. I have this dilemma and I'm like, okay, I have this public life, but I don't want to go in public. I can't advertise where I'm going to be. And I'm a performer. So I had to like take a hiatus from performing. I still to this day have this feeling where I do look over my shoulder sometimes. Like I do kind of like look around or like scan a room. I got asked to do a storytelling show at this famous Spanish restaurant. So I put up the flyer. And then that friend was like, hey, you cannot do that show. He's the chef there. He quickly remarried someone else. So he was able to stay in the country. And I don't know where he is now. And even to this day, I've had healthy, loving, long-term relationships. And they're always surprised. They're like, how are you, after experiencing that, able to open up again? And I was like, okay, fair question. I think I just believe so hard that I'm worthy of love, you know, and that one person is not going to ruin that for me ever.
When Jenna and I spoke, I asked her if she faced any judgment from family or friends who felt she was rushing into her marriage.
For the most part, was really supportive. Running away to Vegas and getting married, it can go two ways. You know, it could either you married the right person or you married a monster. And I married the monster. I had a couple friends who were very quick to be like, well, you know, you should have seen it coming. And I told you so, like, you should have known. That's the thing with victim blaming, is that like, I didn't see them. I didn't, because I didn't know that his visa had expired. He was so charming, so out of the box of anything I'd ever dated. I take full responsibility for going into it. And I was so optimistic. And that movie Wedding Crashers, this quote sticks out when Christopher Walken and Rachel McAdams are flower shopping. And she's like upset. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm engaged to like psychotic Bradley Cooper. What am I doing? And he tells her, all we can do is make the best decision we can with the information we've been given. And that like stuck with me. And I was like, I'm not going to blame myself because I just didn't have all the information. And then once I did get it, I took action. I knew I had to get out.
I also wanted to know more about how difficult it was for her to escape this abusive relationship.
I did go to this abused women's support group at the Y. I was so excited. I was like, oh yeah, these are gonna be my people. Because my only real context was, you know, Jerry Maguire. Bonnie Hunt's going to be there. And sure enough, the leader was named Bonnie, which is hilarious. But as we go around the circle, you know, it's my first time there. And everyone's kind of explaining what's going on. And there was like one woman in a back brace, because her husband had thrown her down the stairs. Another woman had a black eye. It got to be my turn. I was like, hey, everybody, you know, I'm Jenna. This is what happened. You know, I just left him a couple weeks ago. And they're like, you left? And I was like, yeah. And Jake, I was the only person in the circle who had left the guy. And I was like, genuinely, where do they think you guys are? And one woman was like, yoga. Another one was like, you know, the dentist. But that really freaked me out. But it's true though. And like after hearing their stories of how, like what was going on that week in their thing, I was like, oh my God, I wanted to take everyone home with me. I think also understanding like what it takes to get away. I know there's a lot of organizations, they have volunteers that help, you know, get you out, get you into a new place. So there are people doing that work, but I was completely unaware of what it actually takes. Cause like people are so quick to be like, oh, why don't you just leave the guy? Like if I didn't have a family to call, because I was drained financially. This is also what sucked. I had to like rebuild my finances after this because he just spent all my money, you know, and wasn't working. It's hard. It's so hard to get out.
And finally, how did she return to a place where she was ready to love again?
I went and saw a therapist. I hadn't really ever seen a therapist much before. And she helped me kind of sort out these feelings of feeling really overexposed. Because like when I got married, which is something that felt very public, everyone knew. And then to have to come out and be like, oh, I messed up. My judgment was off. I picked the wrong guy. This guy turned against me. I just felt just so overexposed in a way that I didn't like. I liked good exposure that I control, like in stand-up. I can control that. But this was out of control exposure. And so she helped me sort through those feelings. And I started taking myself on dates. You know, I would like go to the bookstore and she would just encourage me. She's like, that's very healthy, you know, to believe in love.
At first glance, Jenna felt like she had found the perfect recipe for happiness. A tall, handsome international chef who embodied all the romantic ideals she held dear. It was unlike anything she'd ever experienced before, and it felt unique and special. And she felt special. Within only 3 months, they had moved in together, gotten engaged, and then married. Jenna barely told her friend she was in a relationship or even dating someone by the time their honeymoon was over, not providing an ample amount of time to identify or let alone address any red flags. Jenna knew this situation was moving too fast, and she wanted it to, until she discovered that his love bombing was just concealing his ulterior motive for staying in the country. Then she found herself in grave danger at the hands of her then-husband, who isolated her from her support system and made her a target for his rage and abuse. As she planned her escape, her worst fears were confirmed by social workers and law enforcement agencies who validated the gravity of Jenna's situation. With the assistance of her family, therapist, and specialized support groups dealing with domestic violence, Jenna found her way to safety. Despite her ordeal, she stands alongside other survivors who continue to believe in and recognize what real love is. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating or relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer, the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.